Thank you, Dan. We all got to listen to you carefully because you say what we're going to say and you improve on what we're going to say. That's right. I was an early adopter of PowerPoints and I'm a photographer, but I am using a new form of pedagogy, which you probably have not seen before. It's called T-shirt ethics. So I have three T-shirts up here which represent three different organizations, three different APHA policies, and in some sense the three threads that we've all been talking about that we're trying to bring together. Let me say that, Dan, despite you not being at that meeting, I'm pleased to say, as your governing counselor, that we adopted for the meeting theme next year climate change. And that beat out... And that interestingly beat out just in investment in public health. And nobody want, and then the third one was children and adolescents. Nobody thinks any of these things are unimportant. And certainly for the organization to give up promoting itself and saying that the climate change is the bigger overarching problem, I think was very significant. And anyway, I'm delighted to report on that. So Jonathan's going to help me with the T-shirts when I get to that point. Let me just also point out that the three organizations that we've been relating to have been the International Association of Environmental Philosophers, which we spoke in Atlanta as a foursome. We've had a lot of fun. You're the last. You're the definitive, as Lisa said, intermediary here with public health ethics. The second one was the American Society for Bioethics and Humanities in Houston. And here we are finishing, at least for the moment, although we're now talking to book publishers. We think this idea of integration is an important one to spread. I'm a geriatric neurologist, and I was supposed to represent the implications of aging in the context of these things that we're doing. And I'm going to, like Jonathan, tell stories and use metaphors, and I'm not going to talk about what's often called the silver tsunami. This notion that the world is going to have not only climate change, but all these older people that are just going to bankrupt our entire healthcare system and cause all other kinds of mischiefs. And as one of them who's now on Medicare, I know that we can create mischief. But I'm going to talk about what the opportunities are as people get older for contributing to society. Dan mentioned my wife and I started this intergenerational school, which brings elders and kids together. But this notion that people at the end of their lives can make a meaningful difference. And I'm going to give you two illustrations. And the first one is Van Rensselaer Potter. You've heard him mentioned too before. I am Van Rensselaer Potter's last student and wrote with him. And I want to, as my first aid, what did I do with my book? Oh, here it is. Half Dan. Take ownership and make sure I get it back. Potter's first book dedicated to all of the involved. He actually invented the word bioethics in 1970. And Warren Wright and I think probably agree that he was first. Sergeant Shriver read about Potter, and then the Kennedy Center became the Kennedy Center for Bioethics about 3 weeks before he was announced. So we took bioethics a bridge to the future, this notion of bridging ethics from Potter. And we'll also see, he was a wonderful guy. He was a National Academy of Science winning member for his work in oncology. He was one of the first biochemists. Riding his bicycle down the hill from his house in Madison, Wisconsin, where he was also on the faculty, as was Leopold. They never met, but the Leopoldian influence in Wisconsin is pretty strong. But what you'll see as I circulate this is his personal creed. This was a creed that he developed in 1970. And if we had been following his creed, if we'd been following his creed, I think for the last 45 years, we would have been doing better. He developed this word, when he was in his second career, what we're calling today an encore career. And he really liked Leopold. He dedicated both books to Leopold. He had a shack. It's kind of the thing to do out there in the Midwest. And Leopold, of course, had a shack. And by the way, Dan, about rock ethics, it's a small step from rock ethics to think like a mountain, right? Which is the expression that Leopold suggested we use. Leopold's definition was interesting for several reasons. One is he said that anything that was ethical was something that preserved the integrity, stability, and he inserted late on and beauty of the biotic community. So one of my themes actually in this talk is to look at the interface between ethics and art, ethics and aesthetics. The other person I want to mention briefly who had an encore career is Arne Næss. Arne Næss, I met twice. I went to Norway to see him. Arne Næss had a shack that was in the Norwegian mountains. In fact, his first shack almost fell down because it was too high. But Næss was a man who was the youngest professor of philosophy at the University of Oslo, developed the concept of deep ecology, and then became an environmental activist and worked with Greenpeace and had a second career after he was a professor, actually making a difference in the world. No offense to professors, by being an activist. And, of course, he was thinking like a mountain, too. And actually, Potter and I wrote a paper on deep bioethics, combining the thinking of Næss with Potter. And I think at this point I will show you the first T-shirt you're on, which is the one that I've been wearing, and the other two, Jonathan's going to model them because I thought you'd like to be more attractive on Jonathan.
Don't get too close, though, because I don't know if Peter's longer than after
anymore. So this is T-shirt. So this is representing the deep ecology. So I mentioned the metaphors. I actually perform as a tree doctor. I moved from being a geriatric neurologist to a tree doctor. A tree doctor is a metaphor for a tree that improves the health of human beings. So we got to take this beyond animals, my friends, to trees. And in the metaphor that the tree doctor gives to human beings to help them think, it's what Lisa and particularly Bruce was talking about. We human beings have got to learn to see the forest for the trees, which is a way of saying we've got to learn to think about systems of interactions that we participate in. But let me, so I've told you about the story of Leopold and Potter and Næss. Let me tell you my story, because that gets to another T-shirt and another public health policy and another organization. So I was a physician working in the dementia space, and I got very concerned about what happens if we have genetic susceptibility, you know, what happens if we have an autosomal dominant mutation, what do you tell people, how do they use that knowledge, and they're very concerned about nursing home care and end-of-life care, and the middle ground research ethics and conflict of interest, which is a huge problem that I don't think bioethicists themselves pay enough attention to. And in that process, I joined the American Society for Bioethics, formed the Environmental Affinity Group with Andrew Jameson and a bunch of others, a group that I think is coming back now, which is a sign of success. But I got very concerned about the moral scope of biomedical ethics. And why did I get concerned about it? Well, because as we advanced our profession of biomedical ethics, so they became departments and developed PhD programs, we became co-opted by medicine in several ways. When you become part of the dean's budget, you're beholden to the dean. When Jim Watson gives you 5% of all the proceedings of the Human Genome Research Institute, you study genetics. And so I honestly think that we have a problem with, I'm sorry, you're doing the T-shirts this time, so yellow T-shirt, with bioethicists in the medical domain, the clinical domain, not asking the deep questions about their own, about medicine, let alone all the other issues of connections to other events, like climate change. So this is the T-shirt that I wore at ASBH. And also at NIH, this is the social construction of a disease called mad cash cow disease. This is a dementia that certain people, including bioethicists, suffer from because there's so much cash coming out of ELSI that they can't think beyond the constraints of that financial resource. All right, so that gets me into, so then the question was, okay, so what happens if I write articles like why I no longer consult with the pharmaceutical industry and think that the fact that the pharmaceutical industry has built into their business models more immoral and illegal behavior, which is why they cough up tens of billions of dollars to as part of their business model because they still make enough profit out of the drugs. So that became a real challenge for me in terms of my own work with that field. So I started looking for other ethical frameworks, and let me suggest two that you might want to consider, and I'll address them in relationship to the Alzheimer's field. Not only this bridging ethics, this connectivity, so that we get doctors and scientists to pay more attention to the environmental health effects. By the way, I go around saying all the time that the greatest threat to the quality of life of people with dementia is global climate change. Why? Because it's the greatest threat to all of us, and the associated income disparities and other things that go along with it. But if you look at Katrina, if you look at Superstorm Sandy, who is it that can't get away? Who is it that is affected by those, well, you know, heat waves, droughts? You know, any environmental disaster is going to affect the vulnerable populations, particularly people with dementia, particularly elderly, particularly kids. So this is the first concept, responsible innovation. How many of you have heard of that term? Comes out of Europe, comes out of the science and technology field more than it does out of ethics. Basically, it says if you want to innovate in a space, you need to think about, you need to engage the people you're trying to help. You need to engage broadly across the different stakeholders. You need to think of the long term. So the model of that is the Alzheimer's Association's claims that we're going to find drugs to cure Alzheimer's disease. We're going to do it by 2025 if you just invest enough money in it. And by the way, if you do that, we're going to save trillions of dollars. And they've just issued a report called Changing Trajectory, where they claim that if we develop this magic bullet, this magic drug by 2025, we'll save these dollars. And when they model that drug in this report, they model the cost of the drug as zero. Well, that's a pretty irresponsible claim. They've also tried to get CMS to approve amyloid imaging, $4,000 a pop. They couldn't get them to approve it, but they got them to issue $100 million to have 200 experts do 20,000 amyloid images. And the model, the design model, is to have the experts decide whether the experts use the test wisely. This is incredible. This needs to be called out as irresponsible attempts at innovation. And I'm going to use a more powerful term than irresponsible innovation. I'm going to use the term institutional corruption. How many of you have heard that term out of the Safra Center? Well, no, you're laughing. Larry Lessing was running for president. He just dropped out. He was going to become president, take care of institutional corruption in Congress, and resign. That's to say, this was less appealing than Donald Trump's positions, and that's pretty hard to be. So. But the point is that the Alzheimer's field can rightfully be called institutionally corrupt because the rules of engagement in the organization, it's an issue of organizational ethics, promote bad behavior on the part of everybody. In other words, this is about the culture of ethics in the Alzheimer's field, which is based around this medical model. So the policy that we're developing at the APHA is a policy about dementia that is going to be a little different than the policy that might come out of the American Neurological Association. It's going to ask questions like, why is early diagnosis always the best thing? And what are you diagnosing? You're diagnosing Alzheimer's, you're diagnosing mild cognitive impairment. I mean, it's a complete mess. Ontologically, epistemologically, aesthetically, ethically, it's a complete mess. So that's my end of my critique, and I have about 3 minutes left. I've got one T-shirt left. Oh, let's go back to beauty for a minute. Because that's what Leopold added to his definition of ethical. And we don't pay enough attention to that aspect of the implications of that in health and in community life. So a lot of people do. I mean, there are big places that celebrate art, music, and everything else, and we do in our own lives. But I think we have to bring that into our public health space. So what I'm doing, actually, is leaving this meeting to go give an address at the James Michener Museum in Philadelphia on the concept of a caring museum, looking to see what the role of museums are in public health. And the last T-shirt is the T-shirt that I will dedicate to the APHA. You've had the T-shirt for the International Association for Ethical Philosophers. That's for environmental philosophers, that's a tree. You've had the mad cash cow disease. So this is Ai Weiwei. Anybody know what Ai Weiwei is a Chinese dissident artist who made art out of his subdural hematoma that he got in the hands of the Chinese authorities. But he's famous for making art out of a spreadsheet. It was the spreadsheet of all the children that were killed in the earthquakes where the shoddy, corrupt school construction led to the death of thousands of children. And he made art out of the metal rods in the buildings, and he made art out of the backpacks. So that was an artist who was taking on the entire Chinese political system. So the notion that he says on this T-shirt that everything is art and everything is politics is the message that I give APHA in the sense that we're an intensely political space, and I think artists can be our allies, and I think that the idea that we should have, my third policy, a policy on the value of arts and humanities for public health is a policy I'm personally working on with the ethics section. So there's my message for you. The three T-shirts represent the three different organizations. They represent three different domains of work that we are doing at the APHA. And they represent my attempts to communicate in a somewhat different style than my colleagues, but we're all complementary and complementary. Both spellings of the word. So it's been fun to do this with you. You're the end act here, the American Public Health Association. Let's get some good bridging done between ethics. Thank you.